Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, brothers and sisters. It's Roshan Muhammad Salih here, the editor of Five Pillars. Now, brothers and sisters, earlier on today, we heard of the sad news of the passing of Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi, one of the most influential, most prominent scholars in the Muslim world. Sheikh Yusuf died in Qatar earlier today, where he was based. Of course, he was Egyptian by birth. He has a fascinating history, which I really wanted to detail to you. Sheikh Yusuf obviously is a household name across the Arab world. Perhaps he's less well known to non-Arabic speakers. So I really wanted to interview somebody who had personal experience of Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi. And that person is Dr. Anas al-Tikriti, the CEO and founder of the Cordoba Foundation. And I recorded an interview with Anas a little bit earlier on. Take a look. So Anas, obviously we've had very sad news today, the passing of Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi. First of all, your brief reaction to that news.
Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. It's an immense loss to the Muslim Ummah. Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi was an exceptional figure on every single level. And the loss, although expected, I met him 5 years ago and he was his health was failing. But still, the fact that he has now passed away is a news that came as an absolute shock, and not only because of the individual, but of the legacy that individual created and will leave behind.
Yeah, I want to actually break down his life from his early years in Egypt to the Qatari phase, etc. But given that you actually met Yusuf al-Qaradawi, tell me, what kind of a man was he?
The very first thing that you notice when you meet Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi is his humility. I'm of a totally different generation, but yet every single time I met with him, and I had the pleasure and honor by the grace of Allah to spend a lot of time working on several projects with him, and every single time he would greet me and he would treat me as though I dare say this, almost an equal. And he would seek my advice on various issues. And on many, many occasions, when he would ask me whether, you know, he should say something or write something or the such, and how that would impact non-Arabic speaking Muslims, he would almost unfailingly follow that advice and guidance. His humility, but also his immense capacity to always produce. It was absolutely incredible. The last time I met with him, and he had just about taken the decision not to appear on any media anymore because he felt that his faltering voice and his health generally didn't allow him to appear to the standards that the actual tasks at hand demanded. But yet, even when I was doing my thing, I could see him writing, he wouldn't use a computer. He would write with his own hands. And there were many, many pages that he had written just before I arrived. He always had that capacity to produce, and his knowledge was, mashallah, it's not me to assess the expanse of his knowledge, but from those who know and in the field of knowledge, they describe his knowledge as being, an ocean. It was something to behold, alhamdulillah.
Okay, so let's break down his life now, Anna. So he was born in 1926 in British-ruled Egypt, I believe. And tell me a little bit about his early years. So I believe that obviously he had the religious education, he became a Muslim Brotherhood activist, that got him into trouble, but also he had this anti-colonial activism as well going on, didn't he?
Well, the very first thing to say, and I must point this out, is that I'm blessed to share the same birthday with him. We were both born on the 9th of September. He in 1926, myself many, many decades later. Sheikh Yusuf, as you put it, he was born in rural Egypt, and he grew up in a very conservative and very religious environment, whereby he went to learn the Quran at a very early age. And in fact, he memorized the entire Quran by the age of 11. And within a few years, he came to hear about the Muslim Brotherhood and to hear about the founder of the Muslim Brotherhood, Sheikh Hassan al-Banna, and whom he met and was absolutely inspired by. Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi then went on to receive his knowledge within the Al-Azhar environment. And he excelled in every single field that he studied, in every single theme, every single topic. He absolutely excelled. And he mixed that kind of knowledge with, as you put it, with activism, with and Egypt was then simmering. The Egyptian society was simmering against British colonial power and authority, and there were many attempts to try to curtail that kind of influence. And Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi was part of that. And I hear, and by the way, I'm waiting for a confirmation of this. I hear that at that early age, Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi became absolutely immersed in what was happening across the border in Palestine. And he was amongst the small brigades that went over from Egypt into Palestine in order to fight for the Palestinian rights. I'm yet to confirm this, but I have it on good authority. And then, as you put it, when the revolution happened in 1952, and tens of thousands, probably even more, of Muslim Brotherhood and other activists against the regime were all thrown in prisons. He also suffered that and spent many years in prison. And one thing that he mentioned to me, that by his time in prison cut short his academic education. He had finished his master's degree, but he wasn't allowed to finish his doctoral in Al-Azhar, in Islamic sciences. So when, after many years in prison, he left he went back home, and then he restarted his doctoral studies. And when he came to submit and to discuss his thesis, the panel were all his own students whom he had taught when they were at university. And he absolutely nailed this, as you would say. So his legacy is absolutely immense, and particularly the combination of scholarly knowledge of the highest, absolutely highest degree, with that sense of duty towards society, towards the real issues that the Ummah is concerned with.
So I'm guessing here, but I guess it was possibly due to some of the pressure he was under in Egypt that influenced his move to Qatar in the 60s, I believe. He was probably in his mid-30s at the time. And then over decades, this prodigious output, I think someone told me over 120 books he wrote. He became, in the Arab world anyway, I guess from the 90s onwards, a household name, thanks to his show on Al Jazeera, Ash-Sharia wal-Haya, Islamic Law and Life, something like that. Yes. And just tell me about that prodigious output. What is his kind of contribution to Islamic scholarship?
Well, I mean, this is part of the stupidity of Arab dictatorial regimes, unfortunately. It goes way back before our current Sisi and his ilk. And during that time, what the Abdel Nasser regime did was to basically disseminate the Muslim Brotherhood, the active sort of people who took Islam as a call to action. I mean, that was essentially what had the Muslim Brotherhood stand apart during those times. Right now we have, alhamdulillah, we have many movements, many trends and the such. But back then there was virtually none. So the Muslim Brotherhood basically were dispersed across the entire world. And particularly many of them went to Saudi Arabia, went to the Gulf region, and Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi went to Qatar. And what that did was essentially spread the school, the methodology, the approach, the manhaj, if you wish, that just basically helped to spread it. So Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi settled in Qatar. And as you put it, yes, his output was absolutely incredible. I mean, he has more than 120, 123 titles to his name, some of which are quite expansive volumes. The Qatari government, as far as I understand, started 2 years ago to collate all his works in many volumes, and will be produced in a quite a brilliant kind of edition. Yes, Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi, I mean, the thing that I think one of the characteristics and traits that had him stand apart and stand above many of his contemporaries and peers was not only his knowledge, but the fact that he associated himself with all the issues that the Ummah was concerned with, whether it be Kashmir, whether it be the Muslims living under the Soviet rule, whether it be Muslims in China, whether it be across the world, Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi regarded those issues as his, and he took it extremely personally. It amazed me at times, someone would mention to him that Muslims in some African country, some remote area that probably, you know, he hadn't even heard of, were suffering, and his eyes would well, and he would consider this as something that he needed to take on, and he would ask, what can we do? What do we need to do? And the fact that in the mid-90s, we had the establishment of Al Jazeera, and there was this new attitude of, you know, open dialogue and debate and the such, even in political issues. This allowed Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi a platform in order to reach tens of millions every single week through the program that you mentioned, Al-Sharia wal-Hayat. And literally, tens of millions would follow that program. I know for a fact that many, many non-Arabic speaking countries used to subtitle, they used to translate and subtitle his shows and programs. And that made him the global figure that he truly is.
What about more recent political events in the Arab world? Obviously, the Arab Spring in 2011, there was that iconic appearance in Tahrir Square in Cairo in 2011. I guess that proved to be a bit of a false dawn, though, didn't it? People were saying that his life's work was coming to fruition. Didn't quite happen.
Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi was renowned to be someone who took it upon himself to fight political oppression. In fact, I would go even further and say oppression of all sorts, including religious oppression, but we'll come to that later. But political oppression was something that he was on the forefront of fighting, and particularly, obviously, throughout the Arab world. And therefore, when the Arab Spring started in December of 2010 in Tunisia and then followed in Egypt, Sheikh al-Qaradawi was there all the time, you know, telling people that this is their chance for freedom. This is their chance to overthrow dictators that were aligned with the West and superpowers around the world. And they were, you know, the corruption needed to be eradicated and all of that. And therefore, when Hosni Mubarak fell, and that was something that no one, I mean, Tunis is, with all due respect, is geographically quite a small country, doesn't have the same strategic impact and influence as Egypt. So when Egypt happened, and after 3 weeks of revolting on the streets and standing vigil, peacefully, they managed to topple Hosni Mubarak. Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi, within a matter of 48 hours, was on the plane back to Egypt for the first time in over 35 years. And therefore, the next Friday, Hosni Mubarak, the first Friday after Hosni Mubarak announced that he is standing aside, Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi was there in the middle of Tahrir Square, and he delivered what is till now coined as Jum'at al-Qaradawi, the Friday of al-Qaradawi. And millions, as we all saw, attended that. Of course, what happened later is for another day to discuss. But Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi was always for people's freedoms.
Yes.
Even religious freedoms, by the way. He would fight for those freedoms. He would fight for people to choose the line that they wanted. He was against oppression and against compulsion of all sorts and any sorts. And subhanAllah, his hope for freedom for the Arab people and the Muslim people generally didn't come to fruition. But I think that set maybe a spark that one day, inshallah, soon will come to fruition.
Inshallah. And I must, before we move on, I must mention that the Egyptian government did impose a death sentence in absentia against Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi. I think it was in 2017. Getting on to a more, a little bit more controversial, I think perhaps today is not the right time to pick this apart in detail, but I did read something about when the Syrian war started in 2011, 2012, he apologized, I think, for his previous words in favor of Iran. I think. And he was very angry with Iran over their role in the Syrian war. Some said his rhetoric became a little bit too sectarian, and he saw it as an existential battle between Sunniism and Shiism. Can you shed some light on that, Anas?
This is something that needs a little bit more time, but very, very briefly, Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi was one of the most, if you wish to use a modern term, tolerant scholars of our time. And in fact, when he established the Union of Islamic Scholars, a really momentous and historic step, if you wish, in our modern times, when he did that, he insisted on appointing his deputy to be Ayatollah Taskhiri, to the critique and to the attacks even of hundreds, probably even thousands of scholars and even members of the Islamic Union of Scholars across the world. But still, he insisted on having Ayatollah Taskhiri, and he was at the forefront of trying to bring together
an Iraqi Shia scholar, is it? Iraqi Shia?
He's Iranian Shi'i.
He's
a merja, he's an authority. And Sheikh al-Qaradawi spent years, I know this for a fact because I helped him translate and interpret many, many of the meetings, of kind of bringing together Sunnism and Shi'ism. He gave frank advice to the leadership in Iran over many, many years not to approach Sunni areas such as North Africa and the such, because this would create hostility towards them. And that's something that he didn't want. He felt that the entire Muslim Ummah, regardless of their trends, regardless of their madhab, can unite on the main issues, including the issue of Palestine, for instance. And he had so much hope, despite the fact, and I know this also for a fact, that many of his own students, many of his peers, if there were any, would condemn him, condemn this particular approach of his, would attack him and criticize him and see him as being, beyond the threshold that is acceptable within Sunni Islam. But yet he insisted on this particular path. So when it came and he felt that all of this was to an extent for nothing, and from Ayatollah Taskhiri, who was commanded by the authorities back in Iran to leave his post, and leaving him there alone only to have to apologize to all those who critiqued him over many, many years. And then Iran's support for the Syrian regime in Syria, regardless of the details, but ultimately his criticism of Iran was twofold. First of all, he said, neither Sunnis should try to convert Shi'i communities in Iran and otherwise to Sunnism, nor should Shi'i Iran try to convert Sunni communities to, because that would create animosity and hostility and a sectarian war. He felt that Iran defied that. And secondly, he felt that no Arab regime, particularly the Syrian regime, should be supported against its own people, should be supported when it's committing basically what is akin to a massacre and mass murder throughout the towns and cities of Syria. Okay. So for that, he had to say, listen, I had my hopes and I fought for those hopes and I did everything I could for those hopes. But I have to admit that it turns out that I might have been wrong. So that was very
important.
What's happened. Yeah. But it's very, very important to understand that Sheikh al-Qaradawi, in everything that he did, he did with commitment, he did with vision, he did with extremely high hopes to bring together Muslims of all trends, of all trends. He refused to attack or to condemn or to critique any approach, even those who attacked him. For instance, one thing that very few of us mention, despite the fact that the shuyukh and ulama of Saudi Arabia particularly used to attack Sheikh al-Qaradawi often, and some of them would even go a little bit beyond, let's just say, what is acceptable and appropriate in at least my estimation. Yet, when Sheikh Ibn Baz, rahmatullah alayhi, when he passed away, Sheikh al-Qaradawi got on the plane and went and attended his funeral. The same with Sheikh Ibn Uthaymeen. Sheikh al-Qaradawi was renowned for never severing his ties with anyone throughout the Ummah. And that, I believe, was what led to him being held in such high esteem.
Anas, my final question. Obviously, we know that Sheikh Qaradawi visited London, I believe, during the mayoral time of Ken Livingstone.
Correct.
I think if he were alive today, he probably wouldn't get the same invite. He'd probably be deported at Heathrow Airport. And I think he was excoriated by some right-wing elements in this country. I think especially for his support for the Palestinians. I think there was a fatwa legitimizing, martyrdom operations in Palestine. Tell me about that, the way he was demonized in the West.
This is one of the most fascinating episodes in the lifetime of British Muslims. I mean, when in the future, Allah wills, and someone collates the history of Muslims from the late 19th century all the way to I don't know when, this is going to be a very important milestone within the development and the coming of the Muslim community to the forefront of one, at least, of the strands of civic life in the UK. Basically, Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi came to London at the invitation of the Muslim Association in Britain, which at the time I was the president of. And we arranged with Ken Livingstone, we explained to Ken Livingstone who Sheikh al-Qaradawi was, we explained to his team what his impact would be and what kind of message he could bring. And Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi, the message of, if you wish, again, using the term tolerance, accepting of the other, the respect of other, regardless of their faith, regardless of their trend, regardless of their lifestyle. We respect each other. If we condemn or critique, we critique an act, a sin, but we do not critique the people. The people we continue to reach out for. We exemplify the beauty of Islam, the beauty, all this message that at the time was absolutely imperative. And it was, this particular visit came in order to see two things happening. The first is the holding of the session of the European Council for Fatwa and Research, which actually the City of London and Ken Livingstone actually hosted. The second is the inauguration of the Union of Islamic Scholars. This happened in London. So Sheikh arrived and he was greeted fabulously by the airport staff as well as Ken Livingstone himself. And there was a very, very big event that we held in City Hall. Now, as soon as Sheikh al-Qaradawi arrived, immediately, your neocon, your Zionist, your right-wing writers, journalists, who threw everything out of the window and started focusing on who Sheikh al-Qaradawi was, what his comments were, and obviously they picked something that he had said regarding suicide bombings, which were quite frequently happening at the time in Palestine. And basically, Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi was, he wasn't, as was alleged, calling for suicide bombings. He wasn't doing that. What he was trying to say to the world was that when the Palestinians get their freedoms to establish their own state, to have their own nation, citizens and the such, and also establish their own army, then suicide bombings are absolutely illegal Islamically. But until then, you can't tell a victim of oppression how to respond. You can't tell someone who is being killed not to retaliate in what may seem as a violent matter. Norman Finkelstein has, when I told him about this, the position of Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi, he asked me, he said, listen, I just want to know what's going on. So I explained to him what he meant. So he said, he came up with the line that then became iconized. He said, it's basically the last slap of the rape victim to a rapist. And so basically it's something that the Sheikh tried to explain, but he was never allowed to, simply because, unfortunately, we have an ideologically driven sector of the media that basically turned their gaze. They just basically, closed their eyes to any kind of potential for good to happen from this particular visit. Then they came up with something about the Sheikh saying something about slapping, the husband slapping his wife's hand or something. Absolutely absurd. Absolutely absurd, when so much could have been done, when so much progress could have been done, when, and I allege this, and I say this, and I claim this, when the 7/7 attacks in 2005 could have been averted by virtue of having and institutionalizing the presence of Sheikh al-Qaradawi in the UK and institutionalizing his narrative amongst Muslims and against and throughout British society as a whole. when we had that chance, unfortunately, those narrow-minded, ideologically driven, absolutely obscure minds of the neocons and the Zionists and the right, they chose something else.
Anas, we're going to wrap it up here because I've already spoken to you about at least 10, 15 minutes longer than I intended, because there's so much to say. But just kind of wrapping up, concluding, what is Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi's legacy?
Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi leaves behind a trove that we will spend years, probably even decades, going through and learning from. However, the Sheikh's fight, constant fight against all forms of extremism, all forms of obscure, of closed-mindedness, that is something that remains with us. That is something that we need to learn from. We need to implement. The Sheikh accepted everyone who had that kind of sense of respect for others and will to actually exert effort and to work for the betterment of everyone. That is something that will stay with me, and I think will stay with everyone who reads and learns from Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi's life.
Okay, thank you very much, Anas. Jazakallah khair for imparting your experience of Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi with us today.
Thank you, Roshan.
So that was Anas al-Tikriti talking about the late, great Yusuf al-Qaradawi. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. Okay, that's it for today, brothers and sisters. But before I go, as I always say, please do not forget to subscribe and like all our social media channels, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, etc., etc. And please do donate to Five Pillars as much as you can every month so that we can, inshallah, continue the work that we do, bringing you these kind of interviews, bringing you news from around the UK, from around the world, on-the-scene interviews, on-the-scene news, on-the-scene analysis. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.